Chapter 18. Upon a wet evening, several months after the last chapter, two interminable rows of cars, pulled by slipping horses, jangled along a prominent side street. A dozen cabs, with coated and shrouded drivers, clattered to and fro. Electric lights, whirring softly, shed a blurred radiance. A flower dealer, his feet tapping impatiently, his nose and his wares glistening with raindrops, stood behind an array of roses and chrysanthemums. Two or three theaters emptied a crowd upon the storm-swept pavements. Men pulled their hats over their eyebrows and raised their collars to their ears. Women shrugged impatient shoulders in their warm cloaks and stopped to arrange their skirts for a walk through the storm. People having been comparatively silent for 2 hours burst into a roar of conversation, their hearts still kindling from the glowings of the stage. The pavements became tossing seas of umbrellas. Men stepped forth to hail cabs or cars, raising their fingers in varied forms of polite request or imperative demand. An endless procession wended toward elevated stations. An atmosphere of pleasure and prosperity seemed to hang over the throng, born, perhaps, of good clothes, and of having just emerged from a place of forgetfulness. In the mingled light and gloom of an adjacent park, a handful of wet wanderers, in attitudes of chronic dejection, was scattered among the benches. A girl of the painted cohorts of the city went along the street. She threw changing glances at men who passed her, giving smiling invitations to men of rural or untaught pattern and usually seeming sedately unconscious of the men with a metropolitan seal upon their faces. Crossing glittering avenues, she went into the throng emerging from the places of forgetfulness. She hurried forward through the crowd, as if intent upon reaching a distant home, bending forward in her handsome cloak, daintily lifting her skirts and picking for her well-shod feet the drier spots upon the pavements. The restless doors of saloons, clashing to and fro, disclosed animated rows of men before bars and hurrying barkeepers. A concert hall gave to the street faint sounds of swift, machine-like music, as if a group of phantom musicians were hastening. A tall young man, smoking a cigarette with a sublime air, strolled near the girl. He had an evening dress, a mustache, a chrysanthemum, and a look of ennui, all of which he kept carefully under his eye. Seeing the girl walk on, as if such a young man as he was not in existence, he looked back transfixed with interest. He stared glassily for a moment, but gave a slight convulsive start when he discerned that she was neither new, Parisian, nor theatrical. He wheeled about hastily and turned his stare into the air, like a sailor with a searchlight. A stout gentleman, with pompous and philanthropic whiskers, went stolidly by, the broad of his back sneering at the girl. A belated man in business clothes, and in haste to catch a car, bounced against her shoulder. Mary, I beg your pardon. Brace up, old girl. He grasped her arm to steady her, and then was away running down the middle of the street. The girl walked on out of the realm of restaurants and saloons. She passed more glittering avenues, and went into darker blocks than those where the crowd traveled. A young man in light overcoat and derby hat received a glance shot keenly from the eyes of the girl. He stopped and looked at her, thrusting his hands in his pockets, and making a mocking smile curl his lips. Now, old lady, he said, you don't mean to tell me that you sized me up for a farmer? A laboring man marched along with bundles under his arms. To her remarks, he replied, it's a fine evening, ain't it? She smiled squarely into the face of a boy who was hurrying by with his hands buried in his overcoat, his blonde locks bobbing on his youthful temples, and a cheery smile of unconcern upon his lips. He turned his head and smiled back at her, waving his hands. Him. He's all right. He didn't mean anything. Let it go. He's a good fella. Didn't he insult me? Asked the man earnestly. No, said they. Of course he didn't. He's all right. Sure he didn't insult me. demanded the man, with deep anxiety in his voice.
No, no. We know him. He's a good fella. He didn't mean anything.
Well, then, said the man, resolutely, I'm go apologize. When the waiter came, the man struggled to the middle of the floor.
Girl shed you insult me. I shay damn lie. I apologize.
All right, said the waiter. The man sat down. He felt a sleepy but strong desire to straighten things out and have a perfect understanding with everybody.
Nell, I Alice Trezia Square, didn't I?
You likes me, Don yes, Nell? I'm Goofler?
Sure, said the woman of brilliance and audacity.
You knows I'm stuck on yes, Don yes, Nell?
Sure, she repeated, carelessly.
Overwhelmed by a spasm of drunken adoration, he drew two or three bills from his pocket, and, with the trembling fingers of an offering priest, laid them on the table before the woman.
Yes knows, damn it, yes kin of all God, cause I'm stuck on yes, Nell, damned, I'm stuck on yes, Nell by drink damned, we're having a luva time when anyone trees me I damned, Nell we're having a luva time.
Shortly he went to sleep with his swollen face fallen forward on his chest. The women drank and laughed, not heeding the slumbering man in the corner. Finally he lurched forward, and fell groaning to the floor. The women screamed in disgust, and drew back their skirts.
Come on, cried one, starting up angrily, let's get out of here.
The woman of brilliance and audacity stayed behind, taking up the bills and stuffing them into a deep, irregularly shaped pocket. A guttural snore from the recumbent man caused her to turn and look down at him. She laughed.
Had a damn fool, she said, and went.
The smoke from the lamp settled heavily down in the little compartment, obscuring the way out. The smell of oil, stifling in its intensity, pervaded the air. The wine from an overturned glass dripped softly down upon the blotches on the man's neck. She smiled squarely into the face of a boy who was hurrying by with his hands buried in his overcoat, his blonde locks bobbing on his youthful temples, and a cheery smile of unconcern upon his lips. He turned his head and smiled back at her, waving his hands.
Not this eve, some other eve.
A drunken man, reeling in her pathway, began to order.
I ain't got no money, damn it, he shouted, in a dismal voice.
He lurched on up the street, wailing to himself, damn it, I ain't got no money.
Damn my luck. Ain't got no more money.
The girl went into gloomy districts near the river, where the tall bulk factories shut in the street, and only occasional broad beams of light fell across the pavements from saloons. In front of one of these places, from whence came the sound of a violin vigorously scraped, the patter of feet on boards, and the ring of loud laughter, there stood a man with blotched features.
Ah, there, said the girl.
I've got a date, said the man. Further on in the darkness she met a ragged being with shifting, bloodshot eyes and grimy hands.
Ah, what the hell? Think I'm a millionaire?
She went into the blackness of the final block. The shutters of the tall buildings were closed like grim lips. The structure seemed to have eyes that looked over her, beyond her, at other things. Afar off the lights of the avenues glittered, as if from an impossible distance. Streetcar bells jingled with a sound of merriment. When almost to the river the girl saw a great figure. On going forward she perceived it to be a huge fat man in torn and greasy garments. His gray hair straggled down over his forehead. His small, bleared eyes, sparkling from amidst great rolls of red fat, swept eagerly over the girl's upturned face. He laughed, his brown, disordered teeth gleaming under a gray, grizzled mustache from which tear drops dripped. His whole body gently quivered and shook like that of a dead jellyfish. Chuckling and leering, he followed the girl of the Crimson Legions. At their feet the river appeared a deathly black hue. Some hidden factory sent up a yellow glare that lit for a moment the waters lapping oilily against timbers. The varied sounds of life, made joyous by distance and seeming unapproachableness, came faintly and died away to silence.
In a partitioned off section of a saloon, sat a man with a half dozen women, gleefully laughing, hovering about him. The man had arrived at that stage of drunkenness, where affection is felt for the universe. "I'm Gottfleur, girls," he said, convincingly. "I'm damn Gottfleur. Anybody treats me right, I allus treats them right. See?" The women nodded their heads approvingly. "Tea to be sure," they cried out in hearty chorus. "Why, you're the kind of a man we like, Pete. You're out of sight. What ye going to buy this time, dear?" "Anything yez wants, damn it," said the man in an abandonment of goodwill. His countenance shone with the true spirit of benevolence. He was in the proper mode of missionaries. He would have fraternized with obscure attendants. And above all, he was overwhelmed in tenderness for his friends, who were all illustrious. "Anting yez wants, damn it," repeated he, waving his hands with beneficent recklessness. "I'm Gottfleur, girls, and if anybody treats me right I hear, call tea through an open door to a waiter, bring girls drinks, damn it. What'll yez have, girls? Anting yez wants, damn it." The waiter glanced in with the disgusted look of the man who serves intoxicants for the man who takes too much of them. He nodded his head shortly at the order from each individual, and went. "Damn it," said the man, "we're having a luva time. I like you girls. Damn it if I don't. You're right sort. See?" He spoke at length and with feeling, concerning the excellencies of his assembled friends. "Don't try pull man's leg, but have a heluva time. Da's right. Da's way to do. Now, if I saw yez try and work me for drinks, wouldn't buy damn ting. But yer right sort, damn it. Yez know how to treat a fleur, and I stays by yez till spend loss a cent. Da's right. I'm Gottfleur, and I knows when anybody treats me right." Between the times of the arrival and departure of the waiter, the man discoursed to the women on the tender regard he felt for all living things. He laid stress upon the purity of his motives in all dealings with men in the world, and spoke of the fervor of his friendship for those who were amiable. Tears welled slowly from his eyes. His voice quavered when he spoke to them. Once when the waiter was about to depart with an empty tray, the man drew a coin from his pocket, and held it forth. "Here," said he, quite magnificently, "here's quor." The waiter kept his hands on his tray. "I don't want your money," he said. The other put forth the coin with tearful insistence. "Here, damn it," cried he, "tact. Yer damn Gottfleur and I want yes tact. Come. Come, now," said the waiter, with the sullen air of a man who is forced into giving advice. "P put yer mon in yer pocket. Yer loaded and yez on makes a damn fool of yerself." As the latter passed out of the door the man turned pathetically to the women. "He don't know I'm damn Gottfleur," cried he, dismally. "Never you mind, Pete, dear," said a woman of brilliance and audacity, laying her hand with great affection upon his arm. "And never you mind, old boy. We'll stay by you, dear." "Da's right," cried the man, his face lighting up at the soothing tones of the woman's voice. "Dee da's right, I'm damn Gottfleur and when anyone treats me right, I treats them right. She." "Sure," cried the women. "And we're not going back on you, old man." The man turned appealing eyes to the woman of brilliance and audacity. He felt that, if he could be convicted of a contemptible action he would die. "She, Nell, damn it, I allus trees yes square, didn't I? I allus been Gottfleur why yes, ain't I, Nell?" "Sure you have, Pete," assented the woman. She delivered an oration to her companions. "Why yes sir, that's a fact. Pete's a square fella, he is. He never goes back on a friend. He's the right kind, and we stay by him, don't we, girls?" "Sure," they exclaimed. Looking lovingly at him, they raised their glasses, and drank his health. "Girlsh," said the man, beseechingly, "I allus treat yez right, didn't I? I'm Gottfleur, ain't I, girlsh?" "Sure," again they chorused. "Well," said he finally, "let's have another drink, then. That's right. Hail day woman. That's right. Yer no bloomin' jay. Yer spends yer money like a man. That's right. The man pounded the table with his quivering fists. Tired of reading? Add this page to your bookmarks or favorites, and finish it later. Yes, sir, he cried, with deep earnestness, as if someone disputed him. I'm damn goofler, and when anyone trees near I alice trees las have nazar drink. He began to beat the wood with his glass. Shay, howled he, growing suddenly impatient. As the waiter did not then come, the man swelled with wrath. Shay, howled he again. The waiter appeared at the door. Drinch, drinch, said the man. The waiter disappeared with the orders. That fleur damn fool, cried the man. He insult me. I'm Gemin. Can stand the insult. I'm goin' lick him when comes. No, no, cried the women, crowding about and trying to subdue him. He's all right. He didn't mean anything. Let it go. He's a good fella. Didn't he insult me? Asked the man earnestly. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.